So, welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Craig Dubitsky. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
How you doing?
Very well, thank you. I shouldn't say hi. I should just say hello.
Hello. Right. So, Craig, can you tell us a little bit about you and tell us a bit about the work that you do?
Sure. I am the founder and CEO of a company called Hello Products. We're making what we feel is a next generation of oral care, trying to make oral care for the first time friendly. And I come to this through a very circuitous path. I basically am a lifelong arbitrageur. I used to be a currency trader, an options market maker. I traded on the London Metals Exchange for many years. And I literally see discrepancies in many things from currencies to commodities to culture, frankly, and in seeing holes in all sorts of areas, and a big hole in the way people embrace their products and their brands, and yet what's offered to them for daily use, I decided to sort of take on the challenge of reinventing, or trying to reinvent, a very big category, in this case oral care. And I got involved with CPG, consumer packaged goods, many years ago, after I met one of the founders of Method Products, which is a fabulous household cleaning brand, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with Method or not, but
I know of them. We don't really have their sort of many of their products, I think, here in the UK. But I mean, I'm familiar with some of the stuff that they were doing.
Yeah, really transformational brand. And I identified Method very early as an investment and had led the original investment in Method, but it really was Adam and Eric, the two founders, mixing products effectively in their apartment. And through that experience and watching that company thrive and grow and do things that frankly many people said couldn't be done, I was bitten. There was really no going back for me. So I spent a lot of time with Method. I was on the board for the first 5 years or so, and it was a wonderful experience. And I just got deeper and deeper to this notion of, you know, how can we elevate the everyday?
Right.
And as I really dislike the word consumer. We're people first.
Yes, indeed.
Who happen to consume. So as people, we tend to write our personal narrative through the things that we bring into our lives. And yet when it came to things, products we use and interact with every day, the offerings were, I thought, fairly limited. And when it came to oral care in particular, their emotional range was very limited and really just brands talked about fear and shame quite a bit.
Right.
Killing and fighting.
Yes.
Killing and a lot of fighting in oral care. And the fear is, if you don't use this, you're not going to get the job. If you don't use this, you're not going to get the date. If you don't use this, you're going to go to the dentist and it's really going to hurt you. And I thought, you know, fear and shame are terrific drivers, but haven't we as a culture moved a little bit beyond that? Aren't we a little bit more accepting? I mean, at least I like to hope and think that we are.
Yeah.
So I didn't think there was a war really waging in your mouth. And I thought it was time to do something about that. And just to back up one step, the other few brands I've been lucky enough to be involved with also used design, much in the same way Method did, as a great disruptor.
Right.
And I am the co-founder of a company called EOS, or the evolution of Smooth, and you know, the product there that really was the breakthrough is a lip balm that's this beautiful spherical shaped lip balm. And you know, the idea that you could hold something in your hand and it could feel good and be a little piece of art that you can interact with every day is also really interesting. So speeding up, really, your very succinct question with a more succinct answer. I see holes everywhere. I love design. I love design because it sparks emotion.
Yeah.
And design lets you, if used properly and let free, evolve your conversation and evolve your story as a person And it becomes a form of expression that you get, again, to interact with every day if you apply it towards things like consumer packaged goods. So that's my obsession.
I think it's really interesting around applying sort of design to basically an arbitrage skill, which is basically spotting the gaps and things, I guess. Mm-hmm. But what I did when I did some sort of research on what you've been up to and what you're doing, I saw that you've got, I mean, this is where the design element comes in really heavily. You've got BMW or BWM Design Works?
BMW Design Works.
BMW mm-hmm. Design Works involved with designing the range of products. Now, that was quite exciting for me. One, because I'm a BMW driver, and so I'm a bit of a fan of BMW.
But excellent.
Applying kind of like the those guys have just got big design chops, big time. But it's like that's a bit left field going for somebody who've got chops in sort of car design to applying it to product design. I mean, what was the thinking behind that?
Well, I as well love automotive design. I love design in general, but
okay.
I'm fascinated with cars and by cars, because really in many ways they take on or hope to take on the outward facing personality of their drivers, right? They represent so much more than just a machine that goes 0 to 60 and zero again. They all cars now turn and you know, go fast, and they all do that, but yet they do so much more for us. So I've always been fascinated by cars, and I had been introduced to a fellow named Chris Bangle, who was the global head of design for BMW and okay. BMW Group, so BMW, Mini, and Rolls-Royce. And we were introduced, and I couldn't believe I was actually having a conversation with this person. I was very fascinated by Chris, and to me, what Steve Jobs was to consumer electronics and computers, Chris Bangle was to automotive design, in that he was really, in my view, the first person to really bring design into the boardroom.
Okay.
And to use design as this very important tool to transform the company, the company's offerings. And for the first time, while he was there, BMW had overtaken Mercedes in sales, which had never really occurred, I believe.
Right.
So I was very fascinated with him. And again, we were introduced, and I told him my mission was to elevate the everyday. I wanted to make products that were, you know, very affordable and that couldn't be disintermediated. You know, you have to brush your teeth every day.
Right.
You don't have to buy a BMW, and I'm glad you did. And I'm a big fan. But you really have to use the types of products I like on a daily basis. So he was really fascinated by this notion of elevating the everyday. And we got together in New York, which was fantastic. We had a tea that went from, you know, 8:30 in the morning till 1:30 in the afternoon. And he asked me if I would be willing to spend some time with the U.S. design team. And I was floored. And I went to California and I spent time with them. And I mentioned this whole notion of, you know, how do we turn commodities into desirables? And in the world of automotive design, at least for BMW, you know, a Mini was entry level, and a Rolls Royce meant you must have really done something very right.
Uh-huh.
Or a BMW 3 Series was entry level, and if you had an M car, you know, you really were a master of the, you know, the universe or of all you survey.
Yes.
And I thought, well, what if we could apply the rigor and the thoughtfulness and the notion of precision and performance that their level of design represents to something that you use every day and put in your mouth? And if we tell that story the right way and we do it in a way that's very honest and as thoughtful as we could be, because I think that's really what good design is. It's just about being as thoughtful as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. If we did that right, we wouldn't denigrate or downplay their technical abilities and capabilities. We would do something that just hadn't been done before.
Right.
We could bring a level of precision and performance to a category that is clearly, you know, steeped in that kind of thing. But typically performance is, this is how many germs it kills. And
yeah.
This is how many, you know, forms of bacteria it fights. And what if we brought that same level of rigor and discipline to other aspects of oral care. And it's not just that we went with, let's, you know, create a pretty bottle. I spent a lot of time with these folks, and they transferred people from their Shanghai Design Center and their Munich Design Center to the U.S. to work with the U.S. design team, which, by the way, is also a polyglot. It's just a group of people from all over the world to begin with.
Yeah.
And we spent a lot of time looking at the retail environment, looking at adjacencies and queue abandonment issues and how products feel in your hand. I'm really obsessed with form and function and fit and haptic response, how things feed back to you when you interact with them. Mm-hmm. So it was just this obsession and this really, really intricate level of focus on detail that I think starts to come through in the products. And while most people can't tell you what they're feeling or seeing, it's very rare that someone approaches a car and talks about the signature character line of the profile and how it goes from the grill all the way through to the taillights. They don't do that. Someone slams the door and it makes a certain sound and it feels good. That's what consumers respond to. So how do we apply, again, this type of thoughtfulness to an everyday product that lives out in your bathroom?
Well, I think this, but it's not just the external design that you've actually almost like reinvented. It's actually the inside of it as well. It's almost like the constituent parts of oral care. And it's a bit like I spoke to the guys from, do you know a firm called Honest Tea?
Of course. So I know Seth Goldman from many, many years ago.
So I spoke to Seth and Barry a little while ago about their journey and about how they were trying to reinvent a category by actually thinking about and listening to customers and trying to give them not what they got, but what they wanted.
Well, that's exactly it. And in many cases, and I don't mean this to sound brash, but in many cases, people can't really articulate what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think it's up to passionate entrepreneurs who really have a little latitude, or people in big companies who are given, hopefully, a little bit more latitude to take on the reins and really drive forward with what they're feeling. I'll give you an example of what I mean. We had done a focus group way back when with EOS, and the comments on the lip sphere were not as positive as I certainly would have hoped for. And to this day, even though I have nothing to do with EOS anymore, I'm so glad that we basically didn't listen, because had we have listened to the comments, they were very negative. And as it turns out, you know, you're asking someone who doesn't know what they want at the drive-through fast food restaurant of their choice, where they're going to go spend the money you just gave them for their opinion, you know, an hour earlier. They can't decide what they want for dinner, but they're going to tell you what the future should look like. They don't know what they want to eat 20 minutes after the focus group is finished.
Sure.
And, you know, and I think somewhere, you know, someone like Seth, as an example, you know, has to really listen and feel it deeply and decide enough is enough and spearhead change. And to your point earlier of, you know, we didn't just think of let's draw pretty pictures and make pretty bottles. We cared a lot about what went inside these forms we were creating. And for me personally, I just didn't understand why mouthwash was electric blue or electric green and had to hurt to make you think it was working. The idea that pain equaled efficacy was the most bizarre and foreign concept I could have imagined. If I had a stone in my shoe, I would stop and take it out. I wouldn't think it's a rite of passage and I'm really, you know, toughening myself up and it's so good for me. You know, no wonder you spit out most mouthwash. It hurts. Hurting does not mean it's working.
No, I mean, I find that, I guess I don't necessarily have a huge tolerance to pain, particularly in that area, because, yes, my experience is with it that it does hurt, and therefore I don't use it very much.
Right. And the other thing that was really funny to me, so we developed a mouthwash formulation that is effective and really freshens and has no dyes in it, has no artificial sweeteners in it. And frankly, you can drink it. You okay. could swallow our mouthwash and you'd be totally fine. And actually, it feels really terrific. So it's just kind of interesting. The idea that you would spit something out, like, well, no wonder you spit that stuff out. It hurts.
What's really interesting, it makes me think about it's almost like things that are anathema to what you would normally do. And it's a bit like going to a wine tasting event.
Mm-hmm,
and you take a sip of wine and then they expect you to spit it out. And I'm just thinking, I've been to a few of these events and I'm thinking, I just want to swallow.
Yes,
this is really nice.
Right. So, it's little things like that that I feel make a big difference. And whether or not people know that you could swallow this or, we have no alcohol. Some of the other products have 44 proof. I mean, it's crazy.
That's a good
one. It's just, this stuff just didn't make sense to me. I thought it was crazy to have toothpaste that came in a box.
Yeah.
Because it's just wasteful, and most of the boxes also have foil because it looks shiny and people think it's going to attract attention. But truthfully, you can't readily recycle that box because it's mixed materials that they don't really know how to separate. So all of these things bothered me. It bothered me that a tube of toothpaste, the second you use it, it changes its form and it doesn't look pretty anymore. And you get in a fight with your significant other over squeezing it, rolling it, curling it up. It just all seemed very off to me.
It felt like it could be better.
Well, I think ultimately with design, if it resonates deep enough, it makes you wonder why it was ever any other way before that.
Right.
And I think that's, we still have a ways to go and we're never stopping our efforts to improve and tweak and work again on these little tells, these little reads that you get when you interact with product. But it's a journey. It doesn't, it's never like, yep, we're done. This is it. It never stops. And for us as a small company, speed is a core competency of ours. So when people ask me, what do you do? I said, well, my job is to see the invisible and then make it real. That's basically my job. And we try to do that as quickly as we can and listen as best we can and listen to ourselves too. I mean, we listen to people constantly. We love input and feedback and we solicit it. And that, I think, shows in the fact that we're talking over Skype and from our website. You can Skype with me from our website, and people do. It's awesome.
I mean, so let's pick up that point there. I mean, because the thing that I'm really interested in on my blog and in my work and everything else is a lot of it's around customer service and customer experience, and design is a big part of that, but particularly the service part of it. What was really interesting is that you've got your Skype ID is right on the bottom of the webpage where customers can actually contact you directly. I mean, what's the thinking behind that? I mean, particularly when it comes to customer service. I mean, and how have your customers reacted? I mean, does that mean that you're on the phone all the time?
I told my wife that I expect to sleep in 2017. That's going to be my big year for catching up on sleep. I had this really... I think most of my ideas are probably crazy, but I had this crazy idea when we were thinking about a website that it shouldn't even be a website, that it should just be Skype, that it should literally, or FaceTime or some video chatting technology. And people thought, what are you talking about? And I said, well, our brand is called Hello.
Right.
And other brands talk about killing and fighting. I just don't want to kill or fight with you when I say hello. That's why, we wanted things that tasted good and were effective. And I thought, well, if we're really about being friendly, friendly means you can say hello to us. We're called Hello.
Yeah.
So I thought, wouldn't it just be great if the website were just that? And people who are much smarter said, you can't do that. That's just crazy, and no one wants to see that. You know, they may want to find out where to purchase your product or about the people in the company. And I said, well, couldn't they find that out if they just talked with us? So I compromised because I realized, okay, maybe that's not the most efficient thing in the world, but I really wanted this openness.
Right.
Because I thought these big companies, which, by the way, I marvel at and really I hold them in such high regard. I think whenever I've spoken with people in the media, which is all of, you know, a few months now, not a media speaking pro by any stretch,
yeah,
in case it weren't obvious already, the positioning tends to be, well, you know, you're the little guy and you want to go after the big guy. And I'm sort of really – I'm not indifferent. I really just don't feel that way. I think we have a different offering and a different story and a different product. It's not about our being better or going after somebody. These are incredible brands, incredible legacy, incredible companies behind them. But what also to me was really missing was that these products are in a category called personal care, and they had really become impersonal.
Yeah.
I don't know who Mr. Procter is or Mr. Gamble is or Mrs. Procter or Mrs. Gamble or, you know, Mr. Reckitt or it's or any of the Johnsons.
Yeah.
You know, I know the ampersand. You know, I don't know anybody there. And I thought, you know, we're going to be a human company, and in a connected world like we are in today, wouldn't it be interesting and fun? And I feel right to be open and accessible. And putting the Skype button on the website has been fascinating. People are typically shocked that it's real. That's really what happens.
Right.
So someone, if they go on our website, they will find this button and they'll push it thinking, oh, it's just going to be some automated response,
yeah,
sort of tech.
Yeah.
And I pick up. And I pick up on my phone, I pick up on my iPad, I pick up on my laptop, I pick up on my desktop, I really pick up. And the things that come in from people after the shock, which is pretty consistent, is, wow, this is so cool. I didn't know that this was possible, that a company would really want to talk with me. And I tell them that's why we put it there. We really want to interact with people, and just, you know, you can say hello, you can tell us you like something, you can tell me you hate something. It's all good. It's all how you respond and how willing you are to interact. And we've had some really amazing interactions. I had one fellow who opened up the mouthwash and put it in his bag after he had used it, mm-hmm, in the bathroom, and it leaked on his luggage.
Right.
And I said, obviously, I'm incredibly sorry about that. And, you know, we have a portable breath spray, and typically people don't open a mouthwash and then travel with it. You know, they liquids typically don't really reseal all that great. But regardless, I said, I feel awful, and that's just not cool. And that's, I'd love to pay for your dry cleaning, and, you know, what can I do? And he cracked up and said, you know, I'm not really that fancy. I'm not really worried about that. I just thought you might want to know. And we had this incredible interaction back and forth. And he just was so happy that the response was so quick and human, really. He didn't use that word, but just, you know, it was a genuine interaction. It turns out he has a restaurant in San Diego. So if you're ever here, dinner's on me. I love your company. I can't believe you did that. I'm an entrepreneur. Wow. And then he sent me an email saying, I'm visiting my parents over Thanksgiving, and, you know, now my mom is hooked on your products. And it's great to be able to turn less than exemplary experience into a good one. That's terrific. And I think anyone in customer service, that's, you know, that has to be a goal.
Absolutely.
But to have it happen in near real time when you're nowhere near that person is really exciting. And to be able to hear their voice or see them or respond very quickly to an email is part of what makes it fun. And because we're in such a big category that's typically faceless,
yeah,
to humanize it a little bit seems to resonate really nicely. Again, I think the bar is fairly low.
Yes.
And I think if you just raise it a little bit, it feels like a lot. I love Virgin, and I talk with people a lot about the Virgin brand. I just think Virgin's a wonderful company, a wonderful brand. And I was explaining to somebody that people that I know who fly Virgin tend to really, really love Virgin. And the bar is just so low in air travel. This isn't to damn Virgin with faint praise. It's just the opposite, really. It's that you still have to go through security, and you still have to get to the same inconvenient airport and deal with all the same hassles. And it's not like the airfare is wildly different, and it's not like your plane gets in any sooner, and weather is never a factor for Virgin. You know, the same basic rules of engagement apply. But because of their ability to hire and attract and retain and empower a certain type of person in the organization, or the fact that they have a sense of humor and a wink in their safety videos, or they give you an ice cream, you know, if you're flying across the Atlantic, or they have purple mood lighting in the plane. These little touches make such a huge difference. And that's because people have come to accept, you know, mediocre is the norm, basically. And I think, you know, personally, I just think everything's ripe to be made a little more beautiful and a little bit better. And better could be defined as more natural, sure. Better could be defined as prettier to look at, sure. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. Better could be more environmentally conscious. You know, you can define beautiful or better any way you like, but it just seems like almost everything is fair game now. And in a connected world, you can really make these changes happen, you know, much more rapidly than was possible before.
And do you think all of that, just making things sort of a little bit better and a little bit more enjoyable and a little bit more sort of aligned with what people want? I mean, if you compare yourself to the products that you are trying to compete against, the commodity products, now they're not renowned for having passionate sort of communities of customers and being able to engage with their customers really easy, because ultimately you're talking about the war in your mouth, right?
Right.
And is it because that you think that by adding a little bit in terms of by changing the design and changing the ingredients and changing the way that you talk about it and changing the way that you are, if you like, open to dialogue, that actually that has allowed you to engage with people that don't necessarily want to talk about the products, but actually want to be associated with you and the company, as it were, because that makes more sense to them?
Well, it's a very nice thing to hear you say that. I hope so. I don't have any, this is going to sound potentially disingenuous. I don't really have any ego in it. If people want to interact with me for some reason, I'm excited. I am just so flattered, truthfully, that anybody would want to talk to me. So I love that part. I do think that, again, people are looking to write their own story constantly through their actions and their, to use a funny word, through their stuff. Yeah. And if we can be honest and open and thoughtful, and at least as earnest as we can be, and put it out there, and that is something that people find refreshing or interesting, or a set of values that they also value, and we can be of like mind, that's awesome. And I think that you can't really outsource soul. And that's why people like Seth Goldman and Richard Branson, and there's so many really passionate entrepreneurs that have made a real difference, and they imbue the people that they work with the same level of liveliness. It really changes things, and I think people can feel it. And I think when people can interact with your brand and your company, it makes them feel that there's someone listening and that they matter, and it isn't just transactional.
Sure.
And I think that's ultimately what we all want. You want to be more than just a number and more than just a transaction with any engagement you have, whether it's with an inanimate object or a person. And, you know, it's funny because these categories that I've been lucky enough to play around in, they're called personal care, but they're really impersonal.
Yeah.
And, you know, what a novel idea. And I'm being facetious, but, you know, to make it personal. And
well, indeed. Indeed. I mean, so, kind of doing, well, how long's Hello's products kind of been around? And what's the biggest lessons that you've learned kind of over the last kind of few years? And if you had to had your time all over again, would you do anything differently?
You know, regrets are bad things. So I've been very fortunate to not have too many. But one thing I've learned is that for many people, the default position is no. And
okay.
Learned, and I'm sure any other entrepreneur has faced the same thing. You know, no is, people will say, oh, well, no is a starting point, and, you know, no is not an option. But what I've learned is very big companies in particular, you know, it's just, well, we can't do that. That's not the way it's done. I've learned not really to listen to someone who says no, because chances are there is someone else who will say yes. And, you know, doubt is not a good thing. Questioning and challenging everything, absolutely, that's a fantastic thing to do, because you'll learn so much, and you'll, you know, and if you're a good listener, you know, all the answers are out there. It's not like you can't figure these things out. All the answers are there. You just have to be willing to find the people who can say yes, and to listen to the people that might say, instead of no, let's, you know, the people who will say, let's think about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And when we started this, people said, I'll give you an example with Method from way back when. I remember people saying that they had worked at, you know, one of three global CPG companies, and would say, you know, there's no way you could do this, and you'll never get on shelf, and it'll never sell through, and you'll never be able to handle this with your supply chain, or this with logistics, or, you know, people just typically say no.
Yeah.
It hasn't been done before. And, you know, what I've learned is don't really pay attention to that. Just because those are the folks who probably won't really compete with you anyway. They think it can't be done. So that's one thing I've learned. And, you know, you asked when we started, and I've been thinking about this for a long time. I actually have 20 more ideas like this.
Okay.
But, you know, this category is so big. And again, like I had mentioned, you can't disintermediate it. No one says, oh my God, the Dow's above 16,000. Honey, let's brush 5 times today. Or, oh boy, you know, the unemployment figures came out and they're worse than I thought. Honey, we're going to share this toothbrush for the next 9 months. We're not getting any more toothbrushes. It just doesn't equate.
Yeah.
And anyway, I've been thinking about it for a long time, and the formulation work I started out by spending time on two things. One was making sure that the stuff inside was really good, that it really worked, and that it really tasted great. Because that's another weird thing about oral care. It goes in your mouth. I mean, why shouldn't it taste good? It goes in your mouth. I mean, these are pretty basic things, right? I'm sort of Captain Obvious. I like simple. So,
and why does toothpaste always have to be minty?
Well, there you go. And I don't know who decreed that to be the law. But, you know, mint in and of itself is a good thing. But
indeed,
why can't it be pink grapefruit mint? Why can't it be mojito mint? Why can't it be sweet cinnamon? Why not?
Yeah, and sure.
So I spent a lot of time on the formulations. You know, I hired our own proprietary formulator. So we do all that work in-house. And then I got going on all the trademark related stuff, because I really wanted to make sure we could own a very common word, which was a tricky bit of business, but we managed to make that happen. And from that point, you know, once I had that stuff settled, we literally went from renderings that were just that, renderings, to full-fledged commercial product that was on a shelf in just under 6 months. And people at companies go, that is insane. How did you do that? And like I had said before, the default position for many people is you can't do that. No, 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 no. And I think there's always a way to make things happen. And I've been very fortunate to be able to find, identify, meet up with like-minded, terrific partners who believe that you can do the impossible if you put your mind to it.
Sure.
So we created 20 fully custom commercial tools, and I built the tools in the U.S., which is not the most typical thing to do. The quality of the tooling is superlative. I built this thing so that we could scale because I knew how big the opportunity was, and
right.
I'm glad we did that. So yeah, we built very significant, very robust pieces of our supply chain so that we could really grow the thing and not worry. And it wasn't because we were trying to presuppose we had things right. It was just one of those things where the decision was a pretty clear one. If we're in it, let's really be in it.
Well, I think that's really interesting because a lot the traditional approach, particularly from a big corporate perspective, and maybe also from the approach that's possibly learned by many other entrepreneurs, is to say, when you start thinking about sourcing and manufacturing and supply chains and things, they look at sort of putting together all the pieces, which is, and that's that almost goes around, gets the point where, well, actually, we want to do that for the least possible cost, because we're in a category that's dominated by commodities, and therefore price, and therefore our view of the supply chain has to be a least cost one, as it were. And therefore they'll go down that outsourcing and offshoring sort of route and overseas manufacturing and things. And it sounds like you've just done something, turned that completely on its head and said, if we want to make this as good a quality as we possibly can, then we have to invest heavily in the tooling, because that's the thing that's going to keep the quality up there.
That's right. And you know, the other thing is I'm admittedly obsessed with this stuff around how things interact and feel. So to give you an idea, I'm holding one of our toothpaste tottles in my hand. A tottle is a word, basically it's a combination of a tube and a bottle.
Okay.
And I wanted the fit and finish of the cap to make a certain sound, which, you know, you can hear me clicking it. But I wanted the butterfly hinge to be as low profile as I could get it and still be resistant to tearing and, you know, again, just be robust enough to handle many, many, you know, opens and closes. And I the only group I really could find who could do it the way I thought it needed to be done and in a time frame and everything else happened to be in Italy. Okay. So, you know, I make the cap in Italy. And we have a pump engine that comes inside of our breath spray.
Right.
And typically a pump engine is sourced from one place in particular. And I wasn't comfortable with that part of the world around putting, you know, for a product that goes in your mouth.
Right.
And I found another manufacturer in another part of Italy who could make this pump engine.
Okay.
And everything else is made domestically and assembled domestically and filled domestically. And to give you an idea, and this is a good circle back to BMW, the technical bits they're significant. It's not as easy as it may look. You know, oh yeah, we just, you know, we designed a bottle and it went through a machine and that's it. We had to make a final adjustment on the breath spray that literally was 1/20,000th of an inch. And then it worked. Until then, it didn't quite fit. It didn't quite work. They could leak. These things I'm clicking the breath spray open and close. It's a bulletproof little nugget.
Right.
And literally the attention to detail goes down to 1/20,000th of an inch. And then, boom, they just worked. And that was it. It was done.
Craig, some people might call that slightly obsessive.
Well, admittedly, yes. but, you know, that's what it takes. And again, it's never, you know, we're perfectionists. It's not perfect yet. We're refining things. And again, our core competencies, if I were to lay them out really simply, one is unbridled passion and creativity. Go crazy. Like, how crazy can we go?
Yeah.
And then we rein it in a little bit. So it's really passion, creativity. That's sort of the first leg of the stool. The next is professionalism and operational excellence and obsession. So we try to be as buttoned up as we can be while being as creative and out of our minds as we can be on design and positioning and copy and all that kind of stuff. And you marry that with sophistication and professionalism around how we operate. And then the third leg of the stool is speed. When we just compress everything. So, and we listen throughout all three of these different legs of the stool, these different sort of areas. So as we listen, we can refine, we can add new flavors, we can change copy, we can, you know, we're starting to advertise now, which is really a lot of fun. And we'll get a media company call us up and say, well, we have this incredible thing, but, you know, we would need it by, I mean, it's too late. You'll never be able to do it. We would need it by 2 o'clock. And we'd say, we'll have it to you by noon.
So how do you do that? You've created, I mean, I don't really like the buzzword as well, but you basically created an agile enterprise.
Well, we're asset light and we're idea heavy,
yeah.
You know? So we're not weighed down. Basically, we have the good fortune of missing two traditional things. We have no layers.
Yes.
So we're not some big company that, you know, has to vet 8 layers deep on anything. So we have no layers and we have no legacy.
Yes.
So without the burden and the responsibility that comes with having to manage through those two things. And I don't take it for granted that we're in this phase now where we're able to be as quick about these things as we are. But, you know, we're extremely nimble. And again, I think that's a core competency that I hope stays with us even as we see the growth that we're seeing. We're very fortunate. This is the sound of me touching wood. Or something that looks like wood, compliments of IKEA. We're just trying to have as much fun as we can and create things that we hope people can, you know, fall in love with. Really, that's the real magic.
So, Craig, I mean, what's the plan for Hello Products and for 2014 rather, because 2013 is almost up and beyond. I mean, apart from world domination, obviously.
Sure. Well, we want to make the world a friendlier place. Absolutely. Starting with your mouth.
Good.
But we've been, again, incredibly fortunate. As you were describing, most startups, you know, they hone and they craft their proposition and they test it gently. And we didn't really do that so much. We sort of went a little bit bigger, a little bit faster. And we went from nothing, like I said, renderings, to 6 months later having fully commercialized product. And our first shipments were to 7,857, I believe, was the number of Walgreens stores, Walgreens being the biggest drug store chain in the U.S.
Yeah,
and then to Duane Reade and the select Targets, and now CVS, and we basically, it's, you know, in the past few months, we just went from, you know, nothing to 18,000 doors and big doors. I mean, Kroger, which is,
I mean, that's national. You've got national coverage now.
Yes, from a ridiculously fast, you know, pace. Yes, and the wonderful thing, and this goes back to this Skype capability on our website, and I guess our obsession with being responsive. We have had inbound inquiries from retailers and distributors alike from all over the world. It's been incredible. From the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Cyprus. I'm just jumping around, you know, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Indonesia, Brazil, Costa Rica, Ecuador, Colombia, Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa. Wow. I mean, I'm putting places out. It's been incredible. And from just, you know, the outpouring has been really amazing. I'm lucky enough to have traveled a decent amount. And I can be in Helsinki, and there are the same oral care brands that we have here, or be in Tokyo, and it's the same thing, or be in, you know, the UK, and it's pretty much the same thing.
Sure.
It's just a category that hasn't really seen anything dramatically new other than a whitening claim or a, you know, some other thing you didn't know existed that is now being eradicated through chemical warfare. There hasn't been a lot of new, really, in the sense of emotional newness outside of fear and shame.
Right.
So we're very fortunate. So the growth for 2014 is going to be incredible. We're launching in the balance of North America, which is, I guess, code for Canada, in early 2014. And we've got, like I said, this incredible demand. And the conversations have been just so flattering and so exciting. And fortunately, we built the supply chain that we did so we can handle this type of growth. So we're going to see a lot more distribution in 2014. And we also have a bunch of new products. Our new product development pipeline is something we spend a lot of time on, because that's what car rides and plane rides and showers are all about. You just think, and like I mentioned, our job, part of my job, is to, you know, see the invisible and make it real, and make it really fun and beautiful and delicious and effective. So we're just nonstop with that. And yeah, we don't say, oh yeah, we're going to hire our innovations consultant to come in and tell us what we need to do, or it's 11 o'clock, let's sit around the table and it's innovation hour. You know, we're living it in real time. And this notion of living life in beta, it's the new normal for many. And for us, it's just, that is our normal. Fantastic. So
Craig, I mean, that just, it's an amazing sort of journey. I mean, my final question, and it's a question I always end these interviews on, is this, is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Wow. What a wonderful question. I think I would like to shamelessly plug Hello, obviously, and tell people that, you know, let the brainwash finally eke its way out of your body. You don't need to kill, fight, eliminate, or destroy everything in your mouth. And, you know, just have some fun when you're brushing your teeth and try our stuff out. And I hope you like it. And by the way, you can ping me and let me know what you think. and you'll get a response.
That's brilliant. I tell you what, that, Craig, I'm very excited about your story and your journey and the passion and the, you know, the application of design and the compression of time of what it takes to bring it to, you know, to market and things. And I think it's, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be looking out for the products and trying to figure out a way of, you know, getting them in my, you know, my local town. But that's been brilliant. Thank you so much for that. That's been really, really fascinating.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And stay friendly.